Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. In my rant today, the title over at HartmanReport.com is Trump Salted the Earth, and I put that in quotes, against Biden to get chaos, revenge, and profit. And I know that this is a partial list, but I think it's worth revisiting and amplifying because this is a strategy, for lack of a better word. I mean, let's start off with salt the earth. This was in a CNN report about a week after the election, or a couple of weeks after the election. It was back in November of last year. And the authors of the report on CNN said, some observers, pointing to Trump's rush to pull troops out of Afghanistan over unanimous objections from the military's most senior leaders, as well as NATO commanders, question whether the president and his officials are trying to salt the earth for Biden. Salt the earth? Well, most people have never heard of Abimelech, but, you know, outside of people who are like, you know, very carefully read the book of Judges back in the day, or, you know, are yeshiva or biblical students. But Abimelech was the son of Gideon. You know, the guy that after whom all those Bibles are in the hotels all over the place. Gideon was one of the kings of Israel. Abimelech was one of his sons. He stole all the wealth of the other sons and then killed them. He was sort of that generation's Donald Trump in a way. And they seized this town, this town called Shechem. It's near... It's on the road between Jerusalem and Nazareth, you know, going north of Jerusalem, maybe an hour's horse ride or whatever north of Jerusalem. He sees this town, and as it says in Judges 9:45, Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he took the city and slew the people that was therein, and beat down the city and sowed it with salt. Now, what that's referring to, and this isn't the only historical reference to sowing fields with salt, but it's one of the more well-known ones. What they're referring to is that after you've defeated a people, if you want to just absolutely and utterly destroy them, you pour salt on their fields, and nothing can grow there for, in some cases, 100 years or longer, you know, how long it takes for the rain to eventually wash the salt out. Because salt is toxic to plants. So it kills the ability to grow crops, it kills the ability to grow trees, it'll kill the trees. You can't even grow grass on salted soil. And that's what Donald Trump tried to do to Joe Biden. He, after it became obvious that he had lost the election, He has ordered the Taliban, or he has ordered, excuse me, Pakistan, to release from prison the former co-founder of the Taliban, who is now the leader of the Taliban inside Afghanistan, to release this guy, along with 5,000 of the most vicious of the fighters that they had, who many of whom now have joined ISIS, apparently. And, you know, this ISIS-K, which is now taking on the Taliban government in Afghanistan. This is going to be the next big battle in Afghanistan. It's not going to be between the Taliban and us. It's going to be between the Taliban and ISIS, and it's going to be ugly. So Trump orders these guys released. He cuts out the government. The Ghani government, Ashraf Ghani, was the democratically elected president of Afghanistan. He cuts him out of the loop. Says, sorry, I'm going to negotiate this as president of the United States directly with the Taliban, a group that didn't even have a country. I'm going to negotiate with them. You know, we let their leader out of prison. I'm going to negotiate with them. To hell with what the government in Afghanistan wants or thinks. And then his advisors came back to him. You know, specifically Mark Esper, his Secretary of Defense, came back to him and said, don't do that. In fact, Esper, you know, later talked about it. He said, my concern was that President Trump, by continuing to want to withdraw American forces out of Afghanistan, undermined the agreement, which is why I objected and formally wrote a letter to him, a memo based on recommendations from the military chain of command and my senior civilian leadership, that we not go further, that we not reduce below 4,500 troops, unless and until conditions were met by the Taliban. Otherwise, we'd see a number of things play out which are unfolding right now. This is what Mark Esper said like 2 weeks ago. But he was Trump's Secretary of Defense. And he said, you know, if you're going to give this country to the Taliban, get something in exchange for it. Like, you know, they're going to protect our people, or they're going to allow girls to go to school or something. But Trump was like, no. I lost the election. Joe Biden is going to come in. We want to hand him hell on a platter. And he did. He salted the earth of Afghanistan, metaphorically. Same thing with the COVID vaccines. Donald Trump put his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, the son of convicted swindler, Mr. Kushner, I forget his first name, Jared's dad, the one who ensnared Jared's uncle, his brother, his dad's brother, by sending a hooker over to his house so that he could videotape that and send pictures to his wife. I mean, this is just a weird family. And Jared Kushner, you know, when his dad got out of jail, his advice to Jared was buy a newspaper, buy a big, high-profile, fancy, important building so people will take you seriously in Manhattan, and marry a very rich woman. And Jared Kushner did all three. He bought a newspaper. It's called the New York Observer. It's an obscure little New York newspaper. He paid $1.1 billion for about an $800 million building, 666 Fifth Avenue, an old office building that is now way past its prime. And he married Ivanka Trump. Trifecta. So what was happening was he bought that building on credit. And the banks were saying, you know, that loan has now expired. You owe us $1 billion. So Jared goes over to the Middle East and says to the Saudis and the Emiratis, the UAE, you know, help me out here. I need and the Qataris, I need some money. I need $1 billion. And the Saudis and the UAE, they say, well, get it from Qatar. They're American allies. You got a big military base there. And the folks in Qatar say, we're not going to give Jared Kushner $1 billion. Are you crazy? And so the Saudis and the UAE, you know, do this embargo. They cut off the supply lines, the food supply lines to Qatar. Qatar's this little peninsula, you know, sticking out into the Arabian Sea that's, you know, attached essentially to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and they barricaded them until finally Qatar said, okay, we'll give Jared the $1 billion. And they did. or at least an investment company that they're heavily invested in did. So back to my story. Jared was put in charge of the vaccine distribution, right? The whole Operation Warp Speed thing. But Jared was busy trying to work out the final deals of this billion-dollar deal to bail him out of this failing building in New York City and the rest of his landlord business. He owns a bunch of low-income housing. He's a slumlord. And so Jared never made any plans to distribute the vaccine. This is a vaccine that requires dry ice. Right? It's got to be kept 80 degrees below zero. That was the Pfizer. The other one, the Moderna, has to be kept at near freezing temperatures, below freezing temperatures, below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, logistically, it's going to be complicated. How do you stage and how do you distribute these vaccines to millions of Americans? And so when Biden wins the election, he reaches out to the transition people in the White House and says, okay, what's going on with Afghanistan? And what's going on with the vaccines? And Trump and Kushner and everybody in the Trump administration said, screw you, we're not going to tell you a thing. And it wasn't until January 20th, the day that Joe Biden was sworn into office and walked over to the White House to discover the door was locked. It wasn't until January 20th that the Biden administration discovered how bad they had been screwed, how the earth had been salted. Politico wrote a piece about this on Inauguration Day, January 20th. Quote, the Pentagon blocked members of President Joe Biden's incoming administration from gaining access to critical information about current operations, including the troop drawdown in Afghanistan and the COVID-19 vaccine distribution program. And when Mark Esper, Trump's Secretary of Defense, said, hey, you're giving Afghanistan to the Taliban and you're getting nothing in return and you're doing it in a way that's going to hurt American interests, Trump fired him and replaced him with Chris Miller. Chris Miller, who you may recall, is the guy who wrote the memo that said when he wrote this memo on January 4th, saying that on January 6th, there's going to be this big event at the U.S. Capitol, and you may not, Washington, D.C. National Guard, you may not go and help the D.C. Capitol Police or the D.C. Metro Police. You may not. Chris Miller was the guy who repeatedly was receiving phone calls. He was the Secretary of Defense, repeatedly receiving phone calls from members of Congress, from the governor, Larry Hogan, the Republican governor of Maryland, calling him, saying, can I send my National Guard if you won't let the D.C. National Guard go in? Miller, nope, can't do that. Until it was reported that Trump's stormtroopers had failed in their mission to hang Mike Pence, execute Nancy Pelosi, and hijacked the Electoral College ballots. When the word came out that Pelosi and Pence were safe and the ballots were intact, that was the point at which finally the Secretary of Defense, Trump's handpicked guy, says, okay. And he's still salting the earth. Promoting ivermectin and all these weird cures and just generally trashing Biden at every turn. When does this stop? Will it stop?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is this the fate and future of America, that we are constantly under attack from within one of our two largest political parties? Rick in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, I'll tell you. One question I have for you, like 2 points. One point is, whatever happened about the arresting the 52 Democrats here in Texas that were supposed to be arrested, and the Supreme Court, I believe, said they were supposed to be arrested, and I never heard any more about it, but what can they possibly charge him with? Are they just trying to harass them, or is this really possible, or what?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, they haven't been arrested. They did, a few of them came back. They were able to hold their session. They've passed the law. The governor, I think, as far as I know, there's going to be no... It was a lot of Sturm und Drang, a lot of talking hysteria.
Well, the second quick point is, luckily I have a thing like Facebook, and I put on there because my local Edgar Book school district is not, have the kids do not wear masks. And I put on, Yes, optional right now, but down the road they need to be considered about masks, considering the high rate in places like Texas and Florida where nobody wears masks. And within 1 hour, I got like 50 responses against, you know, well, how dare you kind of thing. You're forcing our kids to, you're being mean to our kids, and they're redoing the mask, it's going to kill them. Within 1 hour, I got 50 responses.
Yeah, and I guarantee you a lot of those responses were not from local parents.
Yes, that's very, very, very believable.
There's an absolute troll army out there that do not represent parents. There are some concerned parents who are misguided or who are misinformed and who are very upset. And, you know, we have to acknowledge that. But there's also this just, you know, I don't know what to call it beyond that, this troll army out there that, and frankly, I suspect that many of them are not even Americans.
Yeah. Very good. Yep, I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, Rick. Good to hear from you. Gary in Alpharetta, Georgia. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hello, Tom Hartman. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, greed has no heart. You're just north of where I used to live. We used to live in Roswell. You're just right up the road.
I know you did. We talked about that. I know it's kind of ironic.
So what's up?
True. So three things, if I may.
We have a minute.
Is I can't. America is, and this is in the context of what you're saying, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, America is much, much more than greed, egos, and trying to be famous. And in my humble view, we must, it's essential. We've got to move forward and turn back this challenge that you're talking about, that government is the problem. Government isn't the problem. Guess what, folks? Government gave me Social Security. It gave me Medicare. It gave me good roads and bridges. There's still a lot of them out there. It gave me freedom, a lot of my freedoms. So we must turn back this, and you have addressed it. I'm just maybe saying it a little differently. We must change this developing momentum towards government being the problem. Yeah. It's wrong, and we've got to stand up for it.
Well, you know, they used to teach in school, when you and I were kids, Gary, they taught us that we, the people, created the government to provide for our needs, right? For liberty and justice for all and all that kind of stuff.
And can I say one more thing?
Quickly.
I sent you a cover thing, email, that greed has no heart, America's core challenge. That's your new book I'm trying to get you to write.
Okay, I'll have to look for it. Gary, thank you for the call. It's even worse than what I just laid out. You know, I just laid out how Donald Trump is salting the earth, right? And you know, against Biden to get chaos and revenge and profit. And so far, he's avoided the final fate of Abimelech, who, by the way, was brought down by a woman. Abimelech was, laying siege to a tower, and this woman dropped a stone from the top and it hit him on the head. So that was the end of Abimelech. And Trump's got a long list of women who might bring him down. We'll see. I mean, who knows? I'm not, you know, wishing any kind of physical violence on him, certainly. But, politically or legally, But how do we cope not just with traitors like Donald Trump, but this movement that is happening within the Republican Party? We have, for example, U.S. Representative Congressman Madison Cawthorn. He's a Republican from North Carolina, a veteran. He's in a wheelchair. Prior to that, he was accused of sexual assault and a whole bunch of other things. I'll just read to you from this piece over at rawstory.com. The North Carolina Republican lawmaker was warned to stop campaigning across the country and start paying attention to his own constituents. On Sunday, the Washington Post reports, Cawthorn told his local Macon County Republican Party, quote, that elections in the United States are rigged and there will be bloodshed if the country's electoral system continues on its current path. Immediately after holding a shotgun, Cawthorn said, I'll tell you, as much as I'm willing to defend our liberty at all costs, there is nothing I would dread more than having to pick up arms against a fellow American. And the way that we can have recourse is that if we all passionately demand that we have election security in all 50 states. Right. So, and then he goes on to say, I will remove Joe Biden from office, and then Kamala Harris, when she inevitably screws up, will take them down one at a time. And then he referred to the people who are in jail for January 6th as political prisoners and political hostages. Now, there are people who are calling, there are people who are calling for this guy to be expelled from Congress, along with a few of his buddies, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan and others. What do we do with politicians who are openly, you know, trashing our government and implicitly calling for violence?
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
First of all, Madison Cawthorn, I said, was a vet. I was wrong. I swear I saw an ad for him at one point in time that talked about military service. Apparently, he was in a car accident, which is why he's in a wheelchair. And he tried to get it. But before his car accident, he tried to get into the Naval Academy, and they turned him down. Thank you to numerous people on Twitter who have corrected me on that. If they did just 5 minutes of investigation, they would also note he was not accepted into the academy prior to the accident, just had daddy call in a favor for a letter of recommendation, writes Jen, the overly privileged woman. For example, you know, one of many. Thank you. Thank you for that. I was wrong. And I want this show to be absolutely bulletproof, no pun intended. If I say something, I want you to be able to take it to the bank. So thanks for that. Somebody tweeted to me this story. This is from last month, CNN Politics. The headline, Ted Cruz is blocking diplomats from being confirmed, and it has nothing to do with their qualifications. 6 months after Biden's inauguration, just six State Department candidates have been confirmed on the Senate floor. Some 60 nominees have been awaiting confirmation for months. Now Ted Cruz has effectively stopped the Senate from voting on senior State Department nominees unless Democrats take the time-consuming steps needed to overcome a filibuster for each nomination, leaving around a dozen offices without confirmed leadership. Ted Cruz is salting the ground. These guys are all about sabotage. Sabotage the government. You know, it started out with the right-wing billionaires back in the day in the 70s and 80s saying sabotage the government so that the government won't tax us anymore. And so that the government won't regulate our businesses anymore. And then it became sabotage the government so the government can't protect labor unions anymore. And then it became sabotage the government so that the government can't prevent us from pouring, you know, poisonous mining waste in the rivers and coal ash and poisonous fumes into the air. I mean, it's just like this nonstop. Like the treason party or something. It's just breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking. Jeremy in Indianapolis. Hey, Jeremy, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you were saying that yesterday you're wondering how long the Republicans could hold out, and you were also saying earlier that you think Ron DeSantis is just afraid of the base, and I don't think that he's just afraid of the base. I think that things have become so corrupt now that it's possible that these Republicans are actually afraid of, you know, ending up in prison because there's blackmail on them that could be expose them, or they could end up.
But why would that prevent DeSantis from simply saying, you know, this new Delta variant is a whole lot more deadly than the original one? And so, you know, in the face of changing science, I'm going to change policy. Why? Who would blackmail him not to do that?
Somebody who wants to destroy the United States and bring us to our knees.
So you think this is being driven by foreign oligarchs?
Possibly.
Yeah. You know, I can't rule
like
that
out. They got blackmail on them, and they don't care. It's not, you know, I mean, DeSantis might have gotten into it, and other politicians might have gotten into it for whatever their reasons, you know, like political reasons. Maybe they wanted to make change. Maybe they believed in the message. Maybe they, you know, wanted to make money, whatever. But now, there was the hacks on the DNC and the RNC, and the DNC stuff got released. The RNC stuff didn't. And I keep thinking about, there was this, I have a hard time saying the word documentary, but I don't know what else to call it, a while back ago called Bohemian Grove. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I haven't seen the documentary, but I'm real familiar with the Bohemian Grove. A friend of mine's father used to be a member, and Henry Kissinger drunkenly peed on his shoe once. They sit in the woods out in California and have bizarre rituals, and it's basically a summer camp for rich and powerful people.
Right. Well, I have this sense of, like, these organizations, like the Bohemian Grove, I don't know if you call it an organization, but, like, Freemasons, fraternities and things, they're really big on secrecy. And the draw is, like, you get a family, and but we're going to teach you all these, like, super secrets of the universe or
like skull and
God
bones
or whatever.
Yale. Yeah.
Yeah. But what secrecy really do? It lets you do things like, oh, what we're really doing in the Freemasons Lodge is watching strippers and sleeping with hookers. And then somebody gets in political office, and it's like, hey, remember that time you slept with that hooker or that underage girl? Hey, why don't you do me a favor?
Right? It's possible. I'm not sure, though, that, you know, that explains why Ted Cruz is trying to block Biden administration from staffing the State Department during a time of international crises. I think that the goal is chaos. Exactly. That's where I was going with that. I think he's just trying to produce political chaos in the United States so that Biden will get blamed for it, so that when Ted Cruz runs for president in 2024, and you know he's going to do that, he will have a chance to take down Joe Biden if he can get the nomination. This is what they're all about.
They're killing their own constituents and having them take things like ivermectin, which is also deadly and such. And their constituents aren't going to be able to vote. They're not trying to get votes anymore. They're not trying to win on policy anymore. They're trying to create enough chaos to bring us to our knees so that we're no longer a political power in the world, and so that somebody else can take that status is what I'm hypothesizing here.
Or not even that somebody else can take the status of being the world's largest superpower, although China certainly seems to be moving in that direction. But although not so much militarily so far, which is, you know, so far a good thing, but rather to put down democracy movements within their own countries that are using the United States. You know, when Tiananmen Square happened in, I believe it was 89, when Tiananmen Square happened, those protesters carried a 12-foot-tall papier-mâché version of the Statue of Liberty into Tiananmen Square before they were slaughtered. We were the beacon to the world. If they can then say to the world, if the Chinese government can say to the world, if the Russian oligarchs can say to the world, if the Saudi kings and the emir of the United Arab Emirates can say to the world, that democracy thing, it doesn't work. Just look at America. You don't want that kind of a mess, do you? If they can say that, then they ensure their own safety. It's not about necessarily wanting to be Napoleon and conquering the world. I think it's about protecting their own safety. It's a very real possibility. Jeremy, I got to get another call in here. Thank you for the call. Larry in Los Angeles, you have some theories here, Larry?
This is not theory. This is reality.
Go for it.
Donald Trump has engineered two insurrections. Well, one of them was in America. That one failed. But he also engineered the insurrection that happened in Afghanistan. He, as you have been pointing out, he engineered the fact that the Taliban would gain in numbers by releasing 5,000 Taliban fighters. Those 5,000 Taliban fighters then released more Taliban fighters.
Yep.
And also they released
And they just released a couple thousand ISIS fighters.
Yes, ISIS-K. And then ISIS-K killed Americans.
Yeah,
there's 13. A direct line for what Donald Trump did to the death of 13 Americans in Afghanistan.
Yep.
And there's no one on the media that's pointing this out. I watched them this morning. All of them will get right up to the point where they'll say, and the Taliban released ISIS-K, but they won't tell you how they were able to do that.
Right.
And the media is basically trying to continuously keep Donald Trump in the loop by not pointing out his crime.
It's a weird thing, Larry, and it almost seems like it's a deference to power. It's like, why isn't the media pointing out that George W. Bush lied us into Afghanistan in the first place? That it was an absolutely unnecessary war, that the Taliban, you know, after a week of our bombing Afghanistan, the Taliban said, we will arrest bin Laden. Don't worry. Everything's good. And we said, no, we want to have a 20-year war with you guys. Why is that not being pointed out? Why is it not being pointed out that Obama knew that the war was lost? That you know, by the third year, Bush knew that the war was lost, and he continued it going. 8 years, Obama knew the war was lost, kept it going. Trump, for 4 years, knew the war was lost. I mean, the war was lost, as James Carville said yesterday, it was lost more than 15 years ago. And Trump knew that, too. And nobody wanted to take responsibility for ending it on their watch. And Trump, you know, dumped this in Biden's lap in a way that was guaranteed to cause a crisis. I mean, that was his intention. Mark Esper resigned as defense secretary over this. And it's like nobody wants to talk about this.
I have a slightly different take on that. And that is yes, Afghanistan was going to be difficult. But when you get a corrupt American president and you put that on top of a corrupt Taliban establishment in Afghanistan, not Taliban, but the Afghanistan administration was also corrupt.
Yeah, the
There's
Ghani
no
government.
Way that's going to come out well,
yeah.
Number one. And number two, see, even with the corruption in Afghanistan, there was no reason that the Afghan government would fall except that Donald Trump set it up to fall.
Yep. He cut the Ghani government out of the loop and negotiated directly with the Taliban leader that he had ordered released from prison, who was the co-founder of the damn Taliban.
Yes. He had to get somebody of stature in order to surrender to.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, he let him out of prison so he could surrender to him. Exactly right, Larry.
Stagecraft.
Larry,
that's
thank you.
That's what he's all about, just stagecraft. Yep.
There you go. We'll be back with more of your thoughts and mine on salting the earth.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And perhaps the bigger question that I haven't even raised, but I'll toss it out there, is how do you unsalt the earth? How do we undo the damage that Donald Trump has done? Is it even possible? Carl in Seattle. Hey, Carl, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Thanks, Tom. I have a comment about something that happened the other day, and you're my age, you know, back in the Vietnam era. We protested the war. We even took over the principal's office for whatever reason. We just wanted to protest, and we were just angry and stuff. In fact, on the bus to high school, I argued all the time with we should be there or not. And I finally ended up getting the Pentagon Papers in the paper. I start reading it off, and they didn't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that was a long time ago. That was 50 years ago. We took our guys, people out of Saigon. It was only Americans, and we took no Vietnamese. 800,000 ended up dying because they had to go to Cambodia. They took on boats. They did this, and there was a big loss of life. Compare that to today. Biden stops the war correctly. He had to do it. 20 years is enough. And then he brings 125,000 Afghans in, flies them all in, doing the right thing, and now McCarthy and these guys want to impeach him. I think they didn't even, there was no conversation about that when Ford announced withdrawal.
Yeah.
This just tells you how long and how hurtful this party has gotten from your dad's party and Eisenhower's party, which I remember. Mm-hmm. And now we got Trump and the meth cases running the show. I think that the contrast is amazing, but I don't think people even remember that. Yeah. I think people lost their history. They're too busy doing their lives. don't care. You know, they got their nice car and house and vacations and stuff. And I think we've just lost our ways because I don't think history and, you know, even current affairs in high school. I remember that was one of my favorite classes. We had a there was an election going on. We had a guy we supported. We debated and all that. It's a long time ago now. People have forgotten. Most of these people I see on the news, on the TV, they're all young guys. They weren't there. I remember distinctly a Vietnam War, every inch of it, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
I dodged the draft, you know.
I got kicked out of high school for publishing an anti-war newspaper that we were distributing on a high school property. And, you know, the kicked out of high school part made it to the Wikipedia page, but the for publishing an anti-war newspaper somehow didn't make it to the Wikipedia page. And you can't edit your own Wikipedia page, so, you know, which is rather frustrating. But in any case, yeah, I remember those times. I remember. Yeah. And there were a hell of a lot of us who were standing up and speaking out. And, and you know, it's I'm blithering here, Carl, but it's we didn't learn the lesson of Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson did lie us into a war. You can't occupy countries over the long term. George Bush lied us into a war. You know, President Polk lied us into the Spanish-American or into the Mexican-American War. He said that we were under attack from Mexico. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened. And you would think that Americans would eventually figure out that maybe Congress should exercise war powers, actual declarations of war, and they should do it based on evidence that has been at least vetted.
Yeah, just look at America. Is it worked for us? We lost Vietnam. We lost Afghanistan.
All right.
Korean War was a tie. Why do we keep doing this to ourselves? And it's really sad. It makes me sad. And people are just ignoring it. I text my friends, no response, no big deal. As well, it is to me.
I'm with you. Carl, thank you for the call. Good talking to you.
Our book today for the Tom Hartman Book Club is The Age of Eisenhower, America and the World in the 1950s by William I. Hitchcock. This is from chapter 19, page 475, about three-quarters of the way through the book. The press corps, bored to tears by the lack of drama in Republican ranks, worked hard to breathe life into the candidacies of New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller and Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater, who might, they earnestly hope, challenge Nixon for the GOP nomination from the left and the right. The Washington Post editorial page noted that both parties inclined toward moderate nominees like Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Nixon, but cautioned that, quote, an excess of moderation can yield a pudding devoid of flavor or shape, end quote, and hoped Goldwater would add a dash of, quote, pepper to the otherwise bland old party's Chicago solemnities, end quote. Indeed, old guard supporters of the dear departed Bob Taft now had a new champion in the ruggedly handsome conservative from the desert west. It was not to be. Goldwater did not seek the nomination and backed Nixon. Rockefeller, whom most veteran Republicans distrusted for his ideological elasticity and his vanity, pressured Nixon to adopt a number of Kennedy-like platform planks on issues such as defense spending, civil rights, health insurance, and housing. Nixon, terrified that a Rockefeller boomlet might snatch away his long-sought prize, caved into these demands before meeting with Rocky in New York on July 22nd. 3 days before the convention opened. Rockefeller, in turn, threw his support to Nixon in a feeble gesture of party unity. In extracting concessions from Nixon on the GOP platform, though, Rockefeller managed to weaken Nixon's case that he and he alone had the toughness to confront Khrushchev on the world stage. The real challenge Nixon faced in taking the leadership of the Republican Party did not come from Goldwater or Rockefeller. It came from Eisenhower. Of course, Ike supported Nixon's presidential bid since Nixon offered the best hope of extending the Eisenhower legacy. But the distance between those two men, which had always been great, never seemed wider than in 1960. Eisenhower had become the world's most respected, most recognized, and most liked man. For all of his apparent political weaknesses and occasional lapses in his mishandling of the U-2 affair, he occupied an unassailable place in the pantheon of great figures of his time. His war service alone would have placed him on history's pedestal, but he followed that with 8 years of dignified leadership of a country whose global power had reached unprecedented dimensions. When Eisenhower arrived in Chicago on July 26 to address the Republican convention, over 1 million Chicagoans lined the streets along his route to the Sheraton Blackstone Hotel. Shouts of joy rang through the miles of well-wishers. "We Like Ike" signs dotted the scene, along with hand-painted expressions of thanks to the old warrior. Confetti, so dense that it stuck to Ike's moist and beaming face, poured from the rooftops. Banners and flags draped every storefront, and lampposts in a blaze of red, white, and blue. It was Ike the crowd wanted. A loudspeaker in a truck following the motorcade blared out a popular tune by the Four Knights. "I love the sunshine of your smile." The president, visibly moved, told reporters outside the hotel, "It's one of the finest crowds I've ever seen." On Tuesday evening, Senator Dirksen, a famously orotund speaker in a profession known for producing magnificent windbags, came to the podium in the amphitheater to introduce the president. Few recalled that 8 years earlier, Dirksen had nominated Senator Taft. Anyhow, the book is The Age of Eisenhower by Hitchcock.
Vincent in Binghamton, New York. Hey, Vincent, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, before you talked about, what are we going to do about that senator, Republican senator, they're down there talking, there's same old dribble. I had said I wish that Joe Biden, and I'm sure he knows this, but I need to say it, I hope he realizes that our media has changed since he's been gone. Even that short period, four years, our media has changed. And I wish he would borrow something from the past. And the way James Carville was with Clinton. You need a guy out there that can get on these Meet the Press shows on Sunday and start giving this information, as Joe Madison says, where the goats can get it.
Yeah.
And you need to have somebody that will attack MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, and all these places when they start saying about, well, you know, Donald Trump is still there, and, he has his base. And you need somebody to say, what base? Where are these people going to go? Rand Paul, Lindsey Graham, Ben Carson? These people have no place to go. The Republican Party has nothing to offer them. This is the time where Democrats have to get rid of this bipartisanship mentality. I'm sorry, guys. This is what we have to do.
Yeah.
We have to take it all. It is not the president. The most the president can do is 8 years. We've got to go to the Congress. They are the ones that are doing it. These are the people that have all these laws. And I'll give you a perfect example. I just read in Forbes magazine, Republican senators have now demanded there be a full count of U.S. military equipment left in Afghanistan. They are humiliated. It's a high-tech military equipment paid for U.S. taxpayers has fallen in the hands of Taliban and terrorist allies and lawmakers, right, securing United States assets, and blah, blah, blah. My question is this, you senators, you Republican senators, didn't you guys sign the check in the budget?
Well, and not only that, where were you when Trump was closing 10 U.S. Air Force bases and leaving all this stuff behind?
Yeah. Where were you guys? You guys signed the check. Every year the Pentagon comes up, oh, we got a helicopter that kind of skips. Oh, here you go. Here's $140 trillion. And they go on off. And we say nothing about it. And now you want to worry about some of this equipment's been there for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
For the last 4 years, where have you been, MSNBC and CBS and Fox? We have no idea. I didn't know we had foreign correspondents anymore. You guys never covered it. You were listening to Donald Trump Review, which has had bad reviews. This is where you've been.
No, I get it, Vincent, and you said it very, very well. And I do hope that the Biden administration can find, a plain-speaking, outspoken James Carville type who can be, part of the face of the administration. Jen Psaki is doing a great job, by the way, but this is a whole different thing. They basically need a surrogate. I'm guessing one will eventually emerge. Gary in East Lansing. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi. I just have to say that I believe if Trump was still in office and considering the way the Republicans don't want to let any Afghans in the country, that he would have just withdrawn all the troops and left everyone. So all the debate about how many people are left behind is not even really a true
discussion.
That
was the deal he cut, Gary, was that on April 30th, we were gone, period, full stop.
Right.
And there were no preconditions. We were not going to get our equipment out of there. We were, it's just like, we're just leaving. And Taliban, it's all yours. And again, like I said, he cut the Ghani government out of the negotiations. Now, I'm not saying that we should have stayed in there longer, but if Donald Trump was interested in protecting American interests, he would have started moving equipment out while he was still president. He would have started moving, you know, translators and people who are affiliated with us, particularly in the hinterlands, while he was still president. Instead, he avoided doing any of that. He was salting the earth. He was trying to create chaos for Joe Biden. And now, and as you point out,
none of the news outlets are saying it. Sorry, none of the news outlets are saying anything about it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this is this just like bizarre deference to presidents. It's like, somehow we just don't want to point out that our presidents, you know, may have feet of clay or may have even, you know, lied or even made mistakes. You know, Gary, thank you. Oh, my.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Earl in Hyde Park, Illinois. Hey, Earl, thanks for watching us on Free Speech. What's on your mind today?
Oh, not a problem. I enjoy watching your program. Thank you. I quickly want to piggyback on something you and your previous caller were talking about as far as combating the disinformation and how we get our changes made that we need to have made in our society. And I told our screener that, number one, we need to wear out our shoe leather. Number two, we have to be bogardish, but not yelling at one another, because when you start yelling at one another, you're not getting your information through. It's just everybody retreats to their corner and it's just a yelling match. And we have to be industrious like the grasshopper and the ant. We have to try to outwork them. I doubt if we can outspend them as far as generating money and capital and other stuff to run programs and get our people elected, but we have to outwork them. We have to, try to gain control of the forum when you're with your friends and try not to yell and scream at one another. Well, you have to be forceful, because one of the tactics that they use is yelling and screaming and preventing you from trying to make your point.
Yeah.
And so it's very effective if you let them, but, you know, you can't not necessarily stoop to their level, but work hard to get your opinions in, and don't let them hog the talking points or whatever.
Yeah,
speak
the truth.
So those are the things I wanted to talk to you about.
Speak the truth. Yeah, I'm with you. Earl, thank you. Very well said. Saul in Seattle. Hey, Saul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to call. It seems to me these days a lot of people seem to have forgotten about the American Madison Grant, who greatly inspired Hitler with one of his books, where he was the guy who came up with the whole blonde hair, blue eye theory.
I don't know about that, Saul.
Yeah, so it was one of during the time in the 1920s of American scientific racism.
Yeah,
this guy actually turns out to be a friend of Theodore Roosevelt and Herbert Hoover's. Right. And he wrote a book that actually Hitler read. It was one of the first pieces of propaganda that was translated from English into German.
Was this guy at the head of the eugenics movement here in the United States? I mean, that's really where Hitler got the whole idea for the Final Solution.
Yeah, and it's weird because not a lot of people even know that this guy exists, and he was like one of the originators of all of these ideas, and you see these ideas being repeated in America right now.
What was the title of his book, Saul?
It was The Passing of the Great Race. It was written in 1916.
1916, fascinating. You know, the things I learn, from the people who listen to this program. Saul, thank you for that.
Of course.
I don't know how I missed that. I mean, that's.
Yeah. So he also helped co-found the Redwood League, and he helped fund the Bronx Zoo.
Huh. So he was a wealthy guy, and an adherent to scientific racism. Incredible.
Yeah, and he did laws about immigration restriction and anti-miscegenation, race mixing and whatnot, too.
Right. Yeah, which is not surprising. You know, it was part of the whole thing. Saul, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I've got some research to do now. I want to thank Joe Biden. I don't think enough of us are saying this out loud. I don't think enough of us are saying this clearly enough. It's easy to start a war, relatively speaking, even a little war. I mean, you know, Reagan had his little war with Grenada. Bush the first had his little war with Iraq. It's easy to start a war. It's damn hard to end a war. Gerry Ford ended Vietnam. And now Joe Biden has entered Afghanistan, and he deserves credit for that. And I realize, you know, Trump did everything he could. It was by my earlier rant about how he tried to salt the ground, how he tried to make it an absolute cluster, a total screwed up mess for Biden. Donald Trump did his best. He tried so hard to screw things up in Afghanistan that his defense secretary, who was a hardcore right winger, Mark Esper, good Republican, quit his job. And when Joe Biden came into office, there were a bunch of people, a bunch of dead-enders in the State Department and in the Pentagon who were saying, you know, that was Trump. He tried to end the war. He promised he would end the war. He campaigned against the war. So let's just ignore that and go back to having a war. Let's go another 20 years. And Biden, whose son had served in Afghanistan, said no. This war is over. Now, he hasn't come out and said what I've said and others are saying fairly clearly, which is that, you know, if this war was lost, it was lost the day it was declared. I mean, it was never declared by Congress, but it was lost when George W. Bush started bombing Afghanistan. Or you could argue it was lost 3 weeks later when the Afghan government fell and George W. Bush decided to start maintaining a long-term occupation of Afghanistan, which would then shovel hundreds of billions of dollars into his vice president's company, Halliburton. Or you could argue that the war was lost in December of 2001 when the Taliban tried to negotiate a surrender with the Bush administration and Donald Rumsfeld said no. But the war was lost from the beginning. And George W. Bush was president for 8 years of that war and did nothing to end it. Barack Obama was president for 8 years of that war and did nothing to end it, to the best of my knowledge. Donald Trump was president for 4 years of that war and did nothing constructive to end it. He tried to sabotage the guy who followed him, but he could have ended it 3 or 4 years earlier if he really believed that that was what was right. And Joe Biden stood up and said, I'm going to end this war. Enough Americans have died. Enough Afghans have died. Enough. It's not something that we can win. We're wasting lives and blood and treasure. And I think it's important that somebody, particularly somebody who's characterized as the far left, as I often am, I think I'm kind of the far middle, but whatever, comes out and says it, and just says it out loud. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you, President Biden. He's getting in some serious flack for this, but that will pass. And I think the majority of Americans are very grateful. I just wanted to say that. Barry in Chicago. Hey, Barry, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I want to say that, of course, I agree with you wholeheartedly that it was time to leave Afghanistan, and Biden did that, which was surprising to me, but it's great that he did it, and he deserves to be commended for that. But I think sometimes perhaps you're losing a bit of critical thinking here in the want to defend Joe Biden, in that, you know, his strategy for leaving, I mean, yeah, there's chaos when you end a war, quote unquote. You can say that. War is chaos in general. But there were Democrats warning him for months about the proper exit strategy and trying to appeal to him. And there's correspondence that they sent him, and he didn't listen.
I know.
And so I think, you know,
actually, the story gets a little more nuanced than that. But yes, there were things that could have been done months earlier, particularly getting out some of our allies from the farther regions of Afghanistan. You know, Barry, I think at a certain point, you have to say, you know, he did the best he could with what he had. I can't believe that Joe Biden, or frankly, even Donald Trump, would, well, God only knows with Trump, but would sit around and say, you know, I'm going to screw up the end of this war. And he's got over 100,000 people out of there, you know, which is pretty good. Barry, I get it. You want to be upset with him. Go for it. But I'm not going to be. James in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks. I want to thank you for all the years that you've been so astute and you kept us all in truth. And just thank you very much, Dr. Hartman. I just really appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you, James. And I get more out of it than I put into it. It's
maybe so, but you're great. I've asked a question of a lot of people over the years. I just have never been able to understand the Senate. And you know, we just had a lecture here on quantum physics, so that was really timely. I'm just trying to do the math, sir. I don't understand how these people can hold progress hostage forever like they've always done. The math doesn't work out, and I've had people in other countries make fun of our government structure whenever it's brought up, and it just doesn't work out, does it? We've got New York State's got two votes, South Dakota's got two votes, California's got two votes, North Dakota's got two votes. These people are different in numbers and in thinking, but explain it to me, Tom. How did we get this?
Well, it was in part the transition from the Articles of Confederation to the Constitution. In other words,
ancient stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It's legacy stuff.
We're antiquated.
We had 13 colonies that all had very, very different histories. You know, Pennsylvania was largely started by the Penn family that were on, you know, and they were kind of on, at one point, on a religious tear. Massachusetts had been, in the 1600s. Massachusetts and New Hampshire had been taken over by the Puritans. They were having wars with the Quakers. You had Virginia, which was, sort of the hotbed of what you might today call Democratic, small d Democratic or small r Republican thinking. And yet it was a slave state, but it was the most anti-slavery of the slave states. You had, you know, people like Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson speaking out against slavery while they were holding slaves, which was totally bizarre. Then you had Georgia, South Carolina, which were all in on slavery, and, you know, John C. Calhoun of South Carolina calling it a positive good in the U.S. Senate. And so, all these different states had different histories, had different backgrounds, had different interests, when under the Articles of Confederation, you know, when we won the Revolutionary War in 1783, we created basically a trade agreement among these 13 colonies. But that was all it was. You know, the Articles of Confederation did not really create a federal government. There were three presidents who preceded George Washington, but we don't acknowledge any of them because there was really no federal government. It was just a giant trade deal. And it wasn't working. And it was putting all, you know, the future at risk. And so the whole idea of the Constitution was to pull those 13 colonies together into one country. But they still had these highly discrete identities, even local dialects, even in some cases, you know, non-English languages that were widely spoken. In Louisiana, Creole, for example, although that wasn't part of the original 13. And so the consequence of this was that, you know, they did the House by population and they did the Senate by state because these states were demanding that their integrity be preserved. We're way past that now, James, and I really think that either we need to break California into three states, break New York, Texas, and Florida into two states each, or add a couple of, you know, add Puerto Rico and add Washington, D.C. We got to do something, because right now Republicans in the Senate represent 40 million fewer people than do Democrats in the Senate, yet they veto everything. James, I got to run. Gar in Decatur, Georgia. Hey, Gar, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Quickly, have you ever heard of Smedley Butler?
I have, yeah. He's the guy
that
the
racket.
Yeah, the right wingers tried to hire him to kidnap Roosevelt.
My thing is, war is not in the 30s. I mean, it's not end of a novel, or it's not an end of a book. It's end of war. And Smedley Butler, you know, he foiled an attempt to assassinate FDR.
Yeah, he did.
They were one to attempt.
He did. And he was the most decorated Marine general in the history of the United States at the time.
Yep. He said war is a racket.
Yep.
And you can go online and check out his book if anybody's interested.
Oh, he starts right out in that book by saying, you know, I was the guy who was there on behalf of the big corporations and the fat cats, you know, basically robbing, raping, and plundering other countries. It's just, it's brilliant. It's an absolutely brilliant book, Gar. Gar, thank you. Thanks for invoking Smedley Butler. I love it. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us to participate. Thus, the demos in democracy. That's Greek for person, I'm pretty sure. People. That's us, right? So get out there, get active. Tag, you're it. Have a great afternoon. Be kind to yourself and those around you, okay? Let's all practice doing a good deed today. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.